Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Joining me right now is Major, retired Major Andrew Fox. He's a former British Army officer. I want to talk about whether phase one of the hostage release was a success and how we think phase two is going to look. So good morning, and how are you?
Good morning. Very good, thank you. I've literally just got back from Washington, D.C., so hopefully I've got some information to share with you.
Okay, amazing. So tell us everything. Don't leave anything out regarding phase one. Was it successful? Yeah, Do you think it was successful?
Look, I think we have to define what success looks like. I mean, the terms of the deal were broadly adhered to. Obviously, we saw Hamas's war crime, pantomime hostages being released. We saw the messaging coming out of Gaza where Hamas are trying to present to the world and to their allies that they're still a strong force that needs to be reckoned with. A lot of performance there, and that's why I call it a pantomime. I don't think they're anywhere near as strong as they're trying to make out, and some of their weaknesses and some of their nasty unpleasantnesses are being exposed in a way they haven't really been since 7th of October. For the last 15 months, Hamas has deleted itself from the conversation. You've barely heard mention of them or the fighting that's actually happened in Gaza. It seems to have been presented as a one-way battering by the Israelis, when clearly we know with over 500 IDF soldiers killed, there was some pretty stiff fighting in Gaza. So we've seen the information war has been played out as it has for the last 15 months. But in terms of success or failure, ultimately hostages have been released. Some of those wounds that were caused to the state of Israel have been able to begin the healing process. There are many, many more hostages still to be released, and a lot is going to hinge on phase two going forward.
Okay, so when I saw one of the headlines this morning about the King of Jordan on his way to Washington, I started thinking about US President Trump saying it's time to redraw the map of the Middle East. I mean, the King of Jordan, he's leaving a country that is currently having riots and tremendous political unrest to go to Washington, D.C., where Benjamin Netanyahu is. I mean, it's very interesting timing that all of this is happening. What's your thought on that?
It is, and we're seeing the Trump effect. And this is how Mr. Trump negotiates, and we're seeing it time and time again. He will take a maximalist position. He'll demand the unthinkable. He'll then row back, and people will feel vaguely satisfied that they got a deal that was better than the one first proposed. And Mr. Trump in the Middle East has proposed resettling 1.5 million people from Gaza to Egypt and Jordan.
Yes.
Egypt and Jordan have both said no. The Gulf states have submitted a letter saying that they think it's a terrible idea. But this is clearly Mr. Trump doing what he does and moving his chess pieces before negotiations start, hopefully today.
Why do you think they haven't taken them in? I mean, you're talking about people who have been refugees for 80 years.
Well, Jordan has a long memory. They've got a very painful recent experience with Palestinian refugees. They remember Black September. And then after that, they look across at Lebanon and see what the influx of 400,000 Palestinian refugees did for that country.
Right.
And Egypt have quite openly said that it's a security threat and they won't consider it. The bottom line is that they haven't got the best record as refugees over the last 80 years. They do tend to destabilize wherever they end up. And as you say, Jordan is already not in the best of shape. Taking an additional few hundred thousand Palestinians might well be the thing that tips the Hashemite dynasty over the edge and sees real change in Jordan. So I think they'll be trying to avoid that at all costs.
Yeah. Where does Qatar sit in all of this? I mean, you've got Qatar that is funding, you know, all of these anti-Israel protests around the world on university campuses especially, and that's probably one of the most effective strategies of Qatar. But then they're part of the negotiations. So, I mean, it's so warped. Where do they sit?
It is. And you know, and I take a very stiff line on Qatar. I think there should be accountability for the way they've behaved over the last few months and years, actually. You know, they've funded terror not only in Israel and the broader Middle East, but also in the West. And they've brought subversion and disruption to our universities and schools at the same time as they play the ally, try to position themselves as negotiators, offer military bases to the US and other countries in Doha, at the same time as harbouring not only Hamas's leadership, but also the Taliban's as well. They've got a real track record of backing our enemies to the hilt. But their money gets them a free pass. And I think one thing I would like to see come from this is some kind of accountability for Qatar for their actions.
It seems that we are entering a phase of accountability. I mean, you spoke about the Taliban. So I was looking at how United States is funding different projects inside the United States as well as outside. And Biden's State Department gave $15 million to the Taliban for contraceptives after the Taliban banned the products. So there you have it. I mean, that is, you know, and Trump has now stopped this because of, you know, accountability. So, Andrew, that is where we leave it. I could talk to you all day. And I do hope that I'd get to speak to you again. Thank you so much. And just, I wish you a wonderful day. Thank you so much. God bless.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks. Bye-bye. That is Major Andrew Fox. He's a former British Army officer.